Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show, where we talk macro, and you wonder if the Bond Kingdom will ever return to its former glory, and I assure you, my friends, it will. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today, and we will adorn the crown as we normally do during the show to prove that not only are we highly convicted about how this will turn around, but that this is potentially the bottom in bonds. In today's show, we're going to try to figure out this, you know, yield curve control, Operation Twist rumors now running around. What's all this about? Is the Fed really doing stealth QE on top of the QE they're normally doing? We're going to answer those questions. We're going to try to figure out, are we really at the peak of the inflation cycle? A lot of people are saying no, but I got some more charts from my buddy Julian, and we're going to dig into those. Plus, the ISM manufacturing data a little deeper than we did yet on Monday, and into the services data. Got some great charts on the bond market. I forget which investment bank published these, but we've got those. We're going to look at how the bond kingdom is actually building a new foundation. I'm going to teach you something that many of you probably don't know about how to read the charts. Let's start out with the first thing. There's some rumors circulating. Here's an article on Zero Hedge today that Will Powell unveil Operation Twist 3.0 tomorrow. There has been spreading chatter that during Jerome Powell's upcoming appearance at a Wall Street Journal virtual event on Thursday at noon, that he's going to unveil changes to the bond buying program and potentially unveil Operation Twist 3.0. Now let's start out with a couple factoids here. First of all, the Fed generally does not make policy changes when they are doing other things. So it would be very unusual for Powell to come out and say, by the way, at a non-Fed meeting or without his cohorts of the FOMC board, that he would make this announcement elsewhere. So he might mention it, but don't worry, there will not be an implementation unless it's on the website. Now, this is important because a lot of people think the Fed's doing yield curve control. They're not. If they were, it not only would have show up on their website on the implementation note or some separate piece that they publish saying what they're going to do, you could actually go look at the operational details of quantitative easing purchases and you'd see it. It's not there. There's been no changes to the program. So what is Operation Twist? Why might the Fed do it? In fact, it's something I think they probably will be forced to do because we're seeing some policy mistakes. Now, we've talked about how Treasury Secretary, I almost said Fed Chair, Janet Yellen, has said that there's a shortage of T-bills. And to solve that problem, she's going to cut the issuance of T-bills and that might lead to negative interest rates on the short end of the curve. Now, keep in mind, there is a 90% correlation. That's right, 90 with short-term rates and long-term rates. So when people say that long-term rates can only go up, if you have a 90% correlation, well, that rubber band, remember we talked about how long-term bond prices have been stretched way down? Well, they snap back. That's why another reason we're seeing a bottom here, potentially. I think I'll let you decide when we get to that section. So what is an operation twist? Well, if the Fed has a problem that there is a shortage of T-bills in the system and the long rates are perhaps getting a little bit out of control, what do you do? Well, you take something you have and you swap it with something you need. Now, for example, let's say that you and I each have a pen. One's black, one's red. Doesn't matter who has what, but we want each other's pen. I want a color in a different color, as do you. I know Crayola King Travis is getting excited. We talk about crayons here, my friends. But nevertheless, when we swap those pens, did anything materially change? No, in our personal inventories, we each have a pen. The only thing that changed was the color. And that's what Operation Twist does. It takes something on the Fed's balance sheet. For example, $326 billion, I'm not suggesting they would do all of this, of T-bills, which they have, and they could swap them with long-term notes and bonds. That way, the balance sheet remains neutral. There's no change. It just changes the composition of it. So from this Fed standpoint, they would not be doing anything additional. They would not be adding to their QE. They would just be effectively swapping pens. So could that happen? Absolutely. Now, what is the net effect of an operation twist at the long end of the curve? So let's say they predominantly swap T-bills for bonds. Now we've done this before. You don't notice the article potentially mentioned version 3.0, is it causes long-term rates to go down. And what would that do for short-term rates? Maybe bring them up a little bit, but we're talking T-bill rates, which are just marginally above zero right now. So this would put pressure on the long end of the curve to move it down. And well, with everybody short that can be short the long end, well, that could cause a lot of problems and trigger a big short squeeze. Now, let's go on and take a look at some of this economic data, because I really want to get into these charts from my friend Julian Biddle, which we looked at on Monday, and I had him run a few more. He's been very generous with his time in doing that for us. Let's go to Tuesday, German retail sales. You want to see an absence of stimulus in retail sales here. You can see in Germany, retail sales year over year down 8.7%. That is a substantial drop from 2.8% the month before. Let's move on into inflation data. So here we have Eurozone CBI year over year in February. This is preliminary data, 0.9%, potentially unchanged for the month before. Not really a marker of huge inflation. How about core CPI, which you strip out food and energy? You went preliminary basis, we're down to 1.1. So slower core per CPI, not really what you get when you're looking for inflation is flat or lower numbers. Let's move down the data here a little bit. We've got Redbook same store weekly retail sales. This is brick and mortar, not online, up 4.6% from a year ago. So, you know, the year over year rate starts to look, should start to look better and better, because we saw a declining retail sales starting in January of last year. Keep in mind the month over month, which is just week to week, from last week to the week, same week in the month before, we continue to see negative prints there. So the year over year data, as we get into the March, particularly the March, April, May data of this year, is going to be very, very misleading because of the pandemic shutdowns that occurred. Moving along, we've got Australian Services PMI. Speaking of Australia, once the show is over, I'm going to be taking a little walk around the world with our friend Martin North of DFA. I don't know when it's going to air, tonight or tomorrow, but keep your eye out for that. So what do we have? Services PMI, slight expansion, expanding at a slower rate than the month before. This is kind of a trend that we're going to see here, is expansion at a slower rate. So remember, again, over 50 is expansion. How far over 50 denotes how much of an expansion. Looking at services PMI out of Japan, again, another month of contraction. So Japan continues to struggle there. How about the Chinese composite? So when you see composite PMI, think of a blend between manufacturing and services, a slight expansion of 51.7, slightly slower rate of expansion than the month before. So again, slowing growth is what you're seeing here. Let's move into today's data. Spanish services PMI, 43. So a contraction in Spain services. How about Italy? Italian services, 48.8. Slight contraction, bringing their composite PMI blended up slightly to 51.4, which is an improvement over last month. So last month it contracted. This month in February, a very slight expansion over the prior month. How about we go over to France? Services PMI, contraction at 45.6. Composite PMI, still slight contraction at 47. Germany, services index contraction over the prior month. So you see contracting over prior months. This is not what you want to see when the backdrop is global inflation. Composite PMI up very slightly at 51.1. Moving into the broad Eurozone. Now let's blend all of these together. Services PMI were slight contraction, 45.7 prior month contraction at 45.4. Looking at the composite, another month of contraction at 48.8. So not a real positive sign. How about to my friends in Great Britain? Services PMI there virtually unchanged at 49.5. Composite PMI virtually unchanged at 49.6. Looking at Eurozone, well, here, producer prices, great barometer of inflation. Year over year rate in January, zero. So if you're looking for inflation, it's not coming out of the Eurozone factories. Looking at mortgage applications. So as interest rates go up, you generally want to see applications go up if the market is absorbing higher interest rates. If they're not, you will see them start to go down. We've seen three consecutive weeks of negative numbers. This week, applications were up 0.5%. No sign that consumers are absorbing higher interest rates. If anything, it's telling us quite the opposite. ADP, non-farm employment change in February. Now, you would think interest rates would be down on this number, but again, people are just selling, and selling more of the long bond at any opportunity they can get. 117,000 jobs. This doesn't even absorb the new entrants to the economy, let alone all the jobs that were lost. This is a absolutely terrible number. Looking at car sales, you want to, again, If you're looking for higher prices and you see inflation, then you should see demand for those. All car sales in February down from 3.7 million to 3.4 million. Truck sales went from 12.92 million to 12.27 million. So less sales is not what you see inflation come out of. How about the market services PMI? Expanded at a slightly faster rate, 59.8, suggesting this is near-term peaking out. The composite market composite PMI, blending, again, manufacturing services together, expanded at a slightly faster rate in February. Going on to the ISM, the more official, I say this with air quotes, official because it's not a government agency, but it is considered the gold standard of manufacturing and non-manufacturing purchasing managers indices. Here we're gonna, and we'll dig a little bit deeper in this. Let's see, non-manufacturing PMI expanded at a slower rate. Again, you'd think that this would bring interest rates down, and obviously that had almost no effect on the market today at all, at 55.3 from 58.7. So you do not want to see expansion at a slower rate. Now, what did keep people glued to higher interest rates was non-manufacturing prices. We'll look at this specifically, jumped to 71.8, very, very high number. We're not really going to get into crude oil stuff. I mean, a build of 21 million and a half barrels. There were some big draws in distills, 9.7, and big draws in gas at 13.6. This is due to what was going on in Texas. So we're not, this will clean itself out over the next couple of weeks. Let's take a look at, let's go back to the manufacturing, the ISM manufacturing PMI, because I want to focus on this prices section. And just so you know, the way you're reading this is what you see on the screen. It's the number of percentage of firms reporting higher prices, the same prices, or lower prices. It nets out the number, and then they somehow modify it into an index that is higher. You know, I don't know what their formula is, but they have a formula for it. And so what you can see going back from November, December, January, February, the percentage of firms reporting higher prices has been rising. Now, there is a point where the number of firms reporting higher prices will decrease. It will go from, you know, say 73 back to 64, 57, and so forth, because there is a limit to how high prices can go. Now, they're not reporting prices received, which where we get out of those regional Fed surveys. It shows us that the manufacturers are not being able to pass on all of those price increases. They're able to pass on some of it, and that is what's called squeezing at the margin, meaning manufacturers are making less profit because they cannot pass those higher prices on, which is not what happens during inflation. Now, let's look at some charts here from my buddy Julian, and big fan of the show, and he shows us prices paid versus 10-year bond yield. Now, we looked at this one before, but I want you to see that this is percent, you know, think of this chart as percentage of firms reporting an increase. Is it likely that next month we're going to see, you know, more than 73% of firms reporting an increase? That is a good question. And you can see when we get up to these levels, it says that, hey, this is about as high as it's going to get. Now, remember, this is a change over the prior month. Now, most people read this and say more inflation is coming. It does not imply that. It means that you're peaking out. So one way to determine if there's likely to be higher prices is what's going on with the dollar. So I asked him to run a chart of the US dollar index here in gray. And what you can see is when the ISM prices paid is at a peak, the dollar is usually at a bottom. So you see peak, bottom, peak, potential bottom, peak, bottom, peak, bottom. Now, why would that matter? Well, if you're importing goods and importing raw materials to process into goods and services, well, then the dollar is a big factor. So as a dollar, if the dollar is indeed bottoming here, that, and we see it in January, the early signs that it's bottom, that will stop this upward pressure on prices. How about crude oil? Well, crude oil is a big input in prices as well, energy costs. And what do you see with crude? When crude prices peak, it tends to match peaks in the ISM prices paid. So here you see peak of ISM, peak in crude. Peak in ISM, peak in crude is not to fall. Here they are together. Here's a big jumble of mess where if you really look carefully, you can see short-term peaks, but those peaks got obliterated by that big bull market in crude. Here's a peak in the ISM, peak in crude. Here's a peak, a short-term peak. Here's a recession peak. So in recessions particularly, a peak in prices paid, matches very nicely with the peak in crude. So you've got these two major things that go into input prices, crude and the dollar. And if you see the dollar bottom and crude peaking, well, that tells you that this move in prices paid is going to go lower. Doesn't mean firms won't report more increases prices, but fewer firms will. That puts downward pressure on interest rates. Tells you the way you properly read this chart is as where we are today, not where we are going. Now let's look at the services sector. Now that you understand that a little bit better, we're going to look at prices here. And there's some interesting stuff in here. We'll see, like, new orders are slowing down. Employment is stagnated. Supplier deliveries are going up. You want to know why we really have inflation? It's because supplier deliveries due to the COVID has just caused a lot of problems. Services inventories are rising. Prices are rising a ton. Backlog of orders up slightly. New export orders up slightly. Imports are flat. Inventory sentiment very unchanged. Let's go down to where's prices. Here we go. So percent of firms reporting higher prices went from 32 down to 26, 32, 43. So most firms are reporting no change in price, but the net change is the index went up. So because it's weighting, obviously it's weighting more to this percent higher. The question is, how long can these services companies drive prices higher? Well, again, you're looking at the dollar being a factor there as well. So big thanks to Julian Biddle for providing those charts. How about this chart, which some of you actually sent me, and I saw it as well, and it shows a 10-year treasury yield model estimate, two standard deviation range. It says, hey, yields are probably likely to go down to zero to negative by January 2022. Now, why does this happen? Now, this is something real important, is when you have rising interest rates, right? They can only be absorbed if there is an increase in the money supply and demand from consumers to handle that. So if you see interest rates rising and demand for loans going down and the money supply stagnating, then that those higher yields are going to get rejected. And that's what you're seeing in this chart here, that when you get these back up, these run up in yields, they get rejected because there isn't enough demand. There isn't the money supply growth. And in fact, you find yourself more in a liquidity trap than anything. So what the person who put this chart together is looking at is saying, look, this is going to get rejected just like it's been rejected in the past, and it's headed lower. And the primary reason that in this article that was cited was the relationship between core CPI, which again is the consumer prices excluding food and energy. And you can see core here in blue. Every time yields go up, core is going down, rejected. Yields up, core down, rejected. Core down, yields up, rejected. And you can see it over and over and over and over again. And core is rolling over and heading lower. And that means this rally in yields is likely to end. Now let's take a look at some charts here. And I want to share with you, many of you really enjoyed the volume profile. And I kind of want to show you another reason we're potentially sitting at a bottom here. We have a ton of volume. This is a big indicator. But what's going on underneath the surface here is, let's look at the 10-day volume. Because what happened last night? Well, we had a nice day rally up in bond prices. We're looking at TLT, the largest traded treasury ETF. And what happened? In the overnight, it went down, down, and then big gap down. Now, what actually happened is you see this red line here. This is where the volume profile said over the last 10 days, this is a spot where there's been the most shares traded hands. And this is usually a point of resistance. Now, I want you to think of these zones as speed bumps, right? So you're in a long parking lot and there's a bunch of speed bumps. And so you go up to a speed bump, you go over, right? And then you zip up to the next one and you slow down and go over. It's a form of resistance, right? So think of them like speed bumps. Now, the more transaction at a speed bump, the bigger the bump becomes. So it's not one of those low ones where you can go flying right over. It becomes one of those really big, annoying ones where you almost have to come to a complete stop and then go over it because the thing rattles your car to pieces when you do that, if you go too fast. So think of that as what you're looking at here. So in order to get through this heavy zone, whoever in the overnight, it gapped lower. So they just jumped it price down. And then because of that, you'll notice that trading volume in this right in this square here, as I'm drawing my mouse around, is real thin. And what do you see during this gap right in here? Well, you see prices move up quickly and down quickly, up quickly and down quickly. And so whomever was doing this knew. They knew that if they could gap over this, the prices would fall quickly. Now, why did it get down here and stop? Because somebody is trying to find out if all these people that have bought in here are real buyers. And now, what is a real buyer? Well, it's someone who has diamond hands. Now, for my dad and my wife who are watching this, who don't know the difference between paper hands and diamond hands, let me give you an explanation. An investor who is said to have paper hands has very low conviction about what they're doing, and if it doesn't move in the way they want, they will quickly sell. An investor who has diamond hands is in it to win it. They're a longer-term investor. They understand what they're doing. They have a broad thesis that they're following or other research, and they're willing to hold on with their diamond hands through the down parts of this. Obviously, as a macro guy, I've got diamond hands. So I already know that, but the market wants to figure out if all these, and who in here has paper hands and get them out. And why would you drive prices down, particularly to this level here? Because you see, this is the second highest level of shares traded at this level. And it went down, and what happened? The buyers here said, oh, hey, you want to bring prices down here? I will buy. And they did. And so right now the overhead resistance is at around 140.50. If we look into today's trading volume, you ever wonder why the overnight, you hear these overnight gaps get filled or they get created? Well, when you move down and you gap down, you get this zone where there's very little volume, because you can see down here, there's very little volume. And so it's easy for prices to move between them. So today I was hoping that we get up into here and then quickly move up to this 140.50 level. Obviously that didn't happen, which means the expectation is tonight there'll be more selling because the overnight castle security is just horrible. But anyways, what you can see is prices got up here, and this morning, this was a strong area of where volume was, and it got moved up to here. And obviously there were people selling into this, and we've seen selling into the bond market for, well, a long time now. But what we look at this 10-day volume, and it tells us that likely tonight, it would not surprise me if we see another gap down to retest to see if this is a strong area. But over time, what you're seeing is a foundation being built of the new castle. Because all these shares are trading hands, and there's lots of them, what it's doing is flushing out all of the weak hands. And the way markets work is when you flush out the weak hands, you know, at bottoms, all the weak players are flushed out, because those who want to take prices higher only want to take it higher with those who have diamond hands. They want those who are strongly convicted, because they want to squeeze out those shorts and make all those sellers pay. So right now, what you're seeing is a foundation of the castle being built, and a little tutorial in volume profile. Just so you know, you can find volume profile on websites like TradingView and most major platforms. Just got to go look for it. Anyways, I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for watching. Thanks for rooting the kingdom on. And hopefully you're part of that new foundation being built. And I'll see you on Friday for the next macro show. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as education information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. The material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by any security financial instrument or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter on personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.